it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Hello and welcome back to the Stadio Podcast. I'm Yusuf Kwonga.
I'm Ryan Hun.
Ryan, how are you doing?
I'm alright, thanks man. How are you?
Very well indeed. Revitalized, refreshed, I'm good. Yeah, very good indeed.
Revitalized and refreshed?
Yes.
And it's only the 11th of January.
Absolutely.
Look at you go.
Listen, live my best life. In my bag.
We hope everyone's staying safe, staying well, wherever you are. Today we're gonna just talk a little bit about Franz Beckenbauer's passing. We recorded the last episode just before the news broke on Monday. We're gonna round up some games from this week because there was some pretty feisty cup games this week, and then we might talk a little bit about the Bundesliga. A couple of transfers, one going out, one coming in, maybe. Apart from that, don't forget to check Righty's House on Friday. Is there any other admin? I don't think there is any other.
We'll be getting some stuff up on the website again soon. There'll be more football stuff.
We will be. Yeah, definitely. But yeah, before we get onto the football, the news broke on Monday that Franz Beckenbauer had passed away. Arguably Germany's best ever player.
I think that's fair. The first person ever to win the World Cup as a captain and as a manager.
Wow.
Extraordinary footballer. Revolutionized the game. I mean, how many can say that? The deep lying playmaker. There's a goal he scored. I don't remember the opposition, but he basically advanced into the opposition box by playing 3-1-2s from deep in his own box. I mean, unreal. Imagine.
I would recommend, like, basically anyone who isn't super. It's going to sound like Shaq here. I wasn't overly familiar with your game, but anyone who. Maybe just doesn't really know, because obviously he retired, I think before I was born. He did. But we've all seen videos of those classic World Cups and those classic Bayern teams, and you know, when he moved to like New York Cosmos, that part of that era.
I was going to say, he didn't retire before I was born.
Well, he got a few years on me, Yusuf Kwonga.
Yeah, tell me about it. Anyway, so carry on.
And a few fellowships as well.
Wow, really? Are we doing this?
Yeah, maybe I've got to age a bit more before I... but no, I'd recommend anyone who, especially any younger listeners, to go and dig out some YouTube clips of Franz Beckenbauer, because I think there's been a bit... there's a big debate with a lot of modern football stuff about, you know, comparing players of different eras. And I think skill set-wise, he's a player who I think could have adapted. I mean, all players would have adapted in theory to any era, but I think the skill set that he had, I think, would have been as relevant now.
Him in particular, there's a direct line between him and John Stones and Guardiola and
Virgil
van
Dijk,
everything they're doing.
Yeah.
Everything those defenders are doing now. And some will say, oh, you old fogies. No, generally, Beckenbauer is someone, I mean, look, this is a footballer who is twice Ballon d'Or winner.
Wow.
How many defensive players win it even once? The man did it twice. Three straight European Cups as captain, like absolute bona fide stone cold. Like, if you look at people whose skill set adapts to now, Remember like Pelé died, the whole highlights, and everyone's going, oh my God, Pelé invented all the skills. Mm-hmm. And Erling Haaland just came out and said, anything you see now, any forward doing, it's because Pelé did it first. It's absolutely the same for Beckenbauer. Like those are two players who, if you put them in the modern game right now, with a bit of like conditioning, modern medicine, they would absolutely be at the very top of the modern game right now. That's not even to me, that's not even a question. I think they were that good. What a legacy.
Yeah, what a legacy. There's a really, really great piece that I'd recommend everyone read him from Andy Brassel on The Guardian about Beckenbauer. It talks about, he wasn't without his controversies.
No, absolutely not. Particularly post-career, I would say.
Yeah. But in terms of a player, there are obviously great players, but there are a few players who whose legacy will be held up as like the gold standard of a position. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a great point.
I think that he, if you were going to go, I mean, maybe this is one for a conceptual episode one day, like the gold standard 11.
That is a great, that is such a great concept.
Maybe not arguably the greatest of all time in any position or whatever, but held up as the gold standard for that particular position.
The one against whom all others are measured.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, it's like, you look at, we're jumping ahead of ourselves, but you look at someone like the Brazilian Ronaldo as a nine.
Yeah. He's the constant comparison. Yeah,
right, absolutely. Like, you have to go through.
The person that the greats coming through are always compared
absolutely.
To.
Absolutely. Also known as the final boss 11.
The final boss 11. Yeah, I mean, I went and rewatched a load of Beckenbauer highlights the other day, and there are some players that you can't, the back of your mind, some of the stuff they do, you just go smooth.
Just floated. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It's really interesting watching, because it's been a while since I've seen any Beckenbauer stuff, but actually how well his specific game has aged.
Yes. Yeah, totally.
Probably Germany's best ever player.
Yeah. And it'll have to go a long way. I don't know how far you'd go to top that, to be honest.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
what will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
All right, man, let's do some football, because easy on the fixture list this week.
That's right.
Maybe they had a little WhatsApp group for the games this week and they were like, should we ramp the chaos up a bit? Because there were some, excuse my language, but there were some fucking chaotic games this week.
Yeah, there wasn't much of what happened.
To be fair, with no disrespect or anything, but in a few games that in terms of the ranking of importance... isn't ginormous.
Yeah, those games had no business being that chaotic.
But I think there's a freedom to say, like, sometimes Super Cup games or League Cup games, like the first...
the derby, the Madrid derby.
Well, yeah, but also there was a Rome derby
Chaos. Oh my God. I'm just surprised Mourinho got none of the reds.
Do you know what I was? Because he got sent off on Sunday, on the weekend again, which we didn't even mention on the show. It's now so normal. It made me realise that there was one, I should have put it in, I think it was the Existential Moment of the Year award for the Stadios, but it was when Mourinho did his kind of, yeah, you're always talking celebration when they got that late winner against Monza.
Mm.
And he knew that the red was coming. He didn't even say anything. He just got up and went.
He wanted
it. And I was
it.
A bit like, oh, I was a bit annoyed that I didn't put that in the Stadios because that was a really good moment. I mean, where do you want to begin? Do you want to begin with the Madrid derby in the semi-final of the Spanish Super Cup quickly?
I think we probably, yeah. Why
I don't
not?
Think we need to go too no, long we, on these we, because we'll they're, be, yeah, you know, be quick, because yeah. I mean, it's the Super Cup, but like,
so the
really, really fun game.
Hilarious game.
8 goals. In fact, there was a big thing this week. The theme this week was dodgy bounces over the goalkeepers.
You say dodgy bounces, but you're like Jostello's header.
I was also talking about like the own goal, Rudiger's own goal, which went over. There was another one.
I still can't work out what happened. It was like, did he hit
there was
on
one
his
in the
foot?
League Cup as well, I think.
So Madrid beat. So the headline is in the semi-final of Spanish Super Cup. Well, one of the semi-finals, obviously.
Yeah, we're calling this out of the other one.
Real Madrid beat Atletico Madrid 5-3. This game was hilarious. Genuinely hilarious. I suppose the highest technical moments is a spectacular goal from Griezmann, who's been lights
so
out.
Good.
For a spectacular goal. An absolutely hilarious goal by Joselu for the go-ahead that was kind of eventually the winner. He seems to head the ball downwards, like onto his foot, loops up over the keeper. And a friend in my WhatsApp group, my signal group, said, one of my friends from our football team, he said, a finish so bad it was good.
Well, it went down as a savage own goal.
It's extraordinary. I mean, So headed it down towards his body and it looped up over the keeper, which is pretty wild.
I did like the on the DAZN commentary of this game. Was it DAZN or Sport Digital? I can't remember. Anyway, when the Joselu goal went in, they were like, the former Hoffenheim, Frankfurt and Hanover man.
Really always claiming it, yeah.
Really giving it a German angle. Which I very much enjoyed. I was just like, oh, nice to hear Hanover getting a shower in the Spanish Super Cup.
Didn't hear that often. Exactly. Yeah. A wild game. Jude didn't score, but he was influential, deeply influential throughout.
I mean, he was very influential in just playing hype, man.
Yeah.
He spent a lot of time hyping the crowd up. But the great thing about this game was that Hermoso gives Atleti the lead after, 6 minutes with a header from a corner. And then Rudiger equalizes with a header from the corner. And then Fulham Mondi with a lovely, lovely finish, actually, to put Real Madrid in front. And then Griezmann's goal, like you mentioned, I think was the pick of the bunch, right?
I think so.
Although, I think Brahim Diaz is up there for a contender because we'll get to that in a minute. But like Danny Carvajal equalises because Antonio Rudiger's own goal, which was such a weird one. I was convinced they were going to rule that out, that one.
Super weird.
Kepa comes for the ball and I don't think that Morata is fouling him, but it's just one of those that you're like, they're going to give this as a foul because it looks like the keeper's being fouled. Do you know what I mean?
Almost like the goal that no one wanted, including Morata himself.
Yeah, I know, right?
So unsightly. No one wants that, yeah.
And then, yeah, Carvajal equalising for...
couple of efforts from Jude and then Carvajal following up, putting in the corner.
Do you know what? That goal was actually really, really fun because... it was just like, oh, someone's hit a shot and it's been blocked. Oh, there's another shot and been blocked. And then Carvajal was just like, was out of shot.
Yeah.
And it was one of those ones, you know, when the ball breaks in the box and you're like, there's a noise here, but we can't see the player in shot yet.
Yeah.
But the people in the stadium can see it. And then all of a sudden they appear.
Yeah.
And they're just like,
love it.
Holy shit, it's got in. Then it went to extra time. We talked about the Joselu goal, which ended up being a Savic own goal. And then...
The Brahim Diaz is a really good goal.
The Brahim Diaz goal was great, right? So this is in stoppage time at the end of extra time. Atleti have a throw, I think, deep in the Real Madrid half. He wasn't quite up for the corner, but he was almost playing the Manuel Neuer against South Korea role.
I enjoyed this goal. I've got a theory about this, Benny, carry on.
Why I enjoyed
it? Yeah, I've got a theory about it.
Oblak's neither staying nor going. He's kind of in no man's land. And he gets a good... I don't want to over-exaggerate it, but I would say 20-yard head start on Brahim Diaz, right? And the thing about it is that you can kind of... there are a few moments where you can completely relate to professional athletes as someone who's never played a professional sport, right? But I know that feeling.
Oblak in the foot race of Brahim Diaz.
And you could just... he's gaining, and he overtakes him. And to be fair... the finish
is excellent.
Because he has no time to really settle himself.
High up on the right flank because he hits at the moment he wins the foot race. That's what makes it remarkable as a finish. Because the reason you love it is because actually it's total chaos. That's why you love it. Chaos. And I think it's your favorite. One of your favorite. I think if you had to name your 10 goals of all time, one of them would be a goal like that. It would be like a break. Yeah.
I think half of them would be goals from when the keepers come up. Because my favourite thing in football, in fact, actually, do you know that, is it Brian's Gun, Twitter account that does those amazing montages? I would love, if anyone who does that account is listening, I would love them to do a montage purely of keepers running back from going up for corners. That's it, because it's the only thing that is better than a keeper coming up for the
I
corner.
Knew it,
the
I knew
sight
it.
Of a keeper running back from going up for a corner.
I know this. I know you too well. It's one of your favourite things.
It's like, oh no, what have I done? What have I done? But it was actually an amazing finish.
It was, yeah.
And it sealed it for Real Madrid, and they'll play the winners of Barcelona or Osasuna.
Something feels weirdly significant about this. I know it's only like a Spanish Super Cup semi, but there's something about Real Madrid clicking into gear when a trophy is at stake. Just as a kind of a testing ground, you know what I mean? Like, you know, like in the NBA right now, they've got the NBA Cup, the in-season tournament. Mm. This is kind of the in-season tournament for Real Madrid in terms of, let's just tune up, let's win this, or let's really go after it. And it's significant, I think, again, that they've got those five scorers. Well, obviously there's no goal and Bellingham not among them. And it's interesting to watch Real Madrid just ease into a bit of form where the goals, you know, we've said they need goals from different parts of the team. Mm. And it does feel like the last month or so, they've really been a bit more expansive in ways that are quite impressive. So yeah, the beast is stirring. Mm. The beast of Madrid is stirring.
All right, so where do you want to go next? Do you want to go Italy?
We have to go there.
Lazio versus Roma. Dali della Capitale in the quarterfinal of the Coppa Italia. Lazio winning 1-0 thanks to a Zaccagni penalty. 3 red cards after 90 minutes. First one was Pedro. Got a second booking. And then did the classic 30 seconds after he'd been showed the red, he turned around and kind of did that's for me.
The way he steamed it, the way he steamed into that argument for the second yellow was like, you know, these reds had straight red energy.
Yeah.
Like they were like, I want a red for this. Like it was his second yellow, but he was like, yeah, it could have been a red. And
Romelu Lukaku had an overhead kick that scared the shit out of the commentators just before full time, but on the replay it was miles away.
Yeah. Well, also he sold it well in his reaction.
Yeah, he did.
So his reaction, like, wow, oh my god, oh god, that was inches over, oh my
god, that
was
so close.
Yeah, oh, then you see it again. Really, Romelu?
But yeah, then two more red cards after the final whistle. One from Azmoun, who kind of decided to grab and slap.
As we say in basketball, he was in foul trouble. You know,
really
much
was.
Of his appearance. Yeah, yeah.
And then Gianluca Mancini got sent off.
He came on as Moon, right?
Yes.
So you talk about making up for lost time. There's some players who are in a hurry. We talk about existential reds, players on a journey. I think all three reds were existential.
An argument to be had that every red in a derby is existential?
That is, do you know what? Now that's an excellent argument. That may be the best take you've delivered on red cards.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I think now I'm going to, as Ian would say, I've gone to that place. You know, as Ian says, I've gone to that place where you're thinking now of the Reds, that the Gerrard is still the gold standard, the Gerrard and the Derby.
Oh,
a minute after coming, that is the absolute gold standard. You talk about a final boss red card.
You know, when people talk about records and they're like, it'll never be beaten. It'll never, ever be beaten. That will never be beaten. That red card will never, ever be beaten as an existential red card.
That is the deepest of all, isn't it? Yeah, yeah.
It's so multi-layered.
I actually would love to interview a group of those players about those existential reds. Not, I don't mean like the cruel fouls.
Actually, that's a really good idea for a show we should do. Interview 5 players solely about one red card that they got.
Right, and we don't mean violent ones. We just mean like those ones you've said something or you've had that moment, you're like, oh, like...
Although it was a stamp.
Yeah.
Does that class as violent?
I think I don't want harm. I don't want the sort of a harmful... You're not looking for like reds that were like harmed.
Van Persie in Barcelona. Prime example.
Yeah,
I would love to interview Van Persie about Barcelona.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I'd love to interview Valverde about the one against in the Derby one.
Well, do you not remember the most, like, one of the top 5 days in Stadio history was when that quote came out when he was just like, all I could hear is Sergio Ramos screaming, kill him.
Oh, God.
I was just like, oh, my fucking God.
That is terrifying.
So, anyway. Lazio won, Roma nil.
Yes.
Jose wasn't among the sending offs this time, but Lazio went through. Do you want to go to another game from this week, which was, I think, one of the most eye-catching results of the week?
Yeah, Atalanta beating Milan in Milan.
Yes.
Yeah, Gasperini sent off for dissent, and then Milan got a goal up. Gorgeous finish from Rafael Leão.
So good.
And then Koop Miners gets a couple and Atalanta go through. They go back. Like, that is such an impressive victory in that context, actually, for Atalanta. Really up against it. You know, the Gasperi sending off and they're going a goal down. You just think they're done. But they managed to pull it out.
Rare from Gasperini.
Yeah, right. No, this is This is what makes it so special. Yeah, like, really? Like you? You're going?
But maybe that was the spark they needed.
True, actually. Maybe it was all orchestrated. The master plan.
It was like, you know, when Pop gets ejected for the Spurs, you know, get the crowd hyped, get the players a little bit more like, being like, all right, we need a bit of energy here and we need to play for something. And, you know, Pop's just like, yeah, I'm going to get ejected. And he's just like, blah, 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 at the refs. And they're just like, get out.
Pantomime, yeah. It's like, get out.
So anyway, Atalanta are going to play Fiorentina in the next round, who had a really impressive penalties victory over
a
Bologna.
Very good Bologna team, yeah. Yeah.
I love that, actually. Fourth versus fifth game in the Coppa Italia.
Yeah, two of the more surprised teams, I would say, in Serie A too this
Absolutely.
Year.
Absolutely, yeah. There was a couple of League Cup games in England this week.
There were indeed.
Do you want to start with...
Start with the headline. Middlesbrough beating Chelsea with a goal from Hackney. Lovely near post finish. Very good win for Michael Carrick's Middlesbrough. Fine coach. Mm. Fine
good
team.
Good game, I thought.
Yeah, I thought so.
Because I thought they defended quite well. But Chelsea missed
that Cole Palmer one.
Well, which there were two, I think he should have scored.
The one that he put wide of the right hand upright.
Yeah.
Maybe that. Because just...
Well, the one after, where Glover palmed it down. And
right.
I think he probably should have done better there as well. Now, I know that Glover kind of like clattered into him afterwards. It was a contested shot, but I think he could have had a couple, Cole Palmer.
The thing about Cole Palmer, I would say, in relation to the miss, I suppose it's a good thing for him. It's now that he's seen as a striker. Like he's been, so when you see him miss a chance.
What is it
like
with
that,
Chelsea and trying to put these kind of attacking midfielders as strikers?
It's wild, but yeah, goodness, yeah. But it was also injuries. In their defence, it is injuries, isn't it?
I still think Chelsea will progress through this tie. I think they'll win at Stamford Bridge. Liverpool coming from behind to beat Fulham 2-1 at Anfield. A lovely goal from Willian.
Yeah,
very nice. Scoring.
Yeah, two touches and a great finish near post. Old school.
Also made an unbelievable sound. There are certain goals that just have this slight delayed reaction because the crowd's at the other end and you can just... Oh, it's
oh
just
yeah,
a nice
he scores the
cop in,
doesn't he?
Yeah. And then there are two goals in the second half for Liverpool. Curtis Jones, by the way, this could be the season for him, actually. If he stays healthy and fit, this year I think is the year where I think he elevates into... He's no longer a young player coming through at Liverpool. He's the... It's Curtis Jones plus two in the midfield.
I love that.
I think he's mega. I mean, you've been...
On that hype train. Do you know what it is? It's
you
like,
have been on the Curtis Jones
you know
hype
that,
train
you know
for
that everyone's got their like Thomas Müller, like, you know, Müller always plays, Van Gaal said. And I think he's Klopp's. I think in the sense that you can just plug him in any one of six positions if you had to. And he'd deliver to a high level.
All right. Well, let's take a quick break and then we'll come back and we'll talk some Bundesliga stuff.
Let's do it.
All right, man, the Bundesliga's back this weekend, but we're not going to talk necessarily about the Bundesliga directly, but a couple of things that are around it.
Mm.
We're going to talk about a couple of transfers. First of all, I think we should talk about Timo Werner going on loan to Spurs.
Which I love.
I do too.
I love it.
I love it. I'm also, there's part of me that is preparing to be slightly underwhelmed by it. But I don't. I think that's just because of the Chelsea and then the return to Leipzig. Chelsea moves and then the return to Leipzig. Although I still think, we talked about this numerous times before, but I still think he did better at Chelsea than he's maybe given credit for.
Mm.
In his all-round play, obviously the goal scoring, there was a big thing about how many chances he missed and his performance against XG, etc. But I really like this for Spurs and I really like it for Werner because I feel that there is a really dynamic group of players at Spurs this season who, yeah, they've had wobbles and stuff like that, but we know why. They had a huge injury list. But I think that the direction and the clarity of what they need to do or what they're being asked to do this season under Ange Postecoglou, it's probably going to be a little bit more chill than it was under Thomas Tuchel at Chelsea.
Yeah.
That's for sure. We'll talk about this with Jadon Sancho in a little bit, but I think it's underrated how difficult it can be to return to clubs in the Bundesliga after you've made a big move away from them.
Mm.
And that Leipzig side had kind of moved on from that old school trio of like Werner, Poulsen and Forsberg as like the main attacking trio.
Yes.
And also, you know, I mean, he had the Tedesco to Rosa thing, and I think that could be, you know, they had a few different changes of style under in the last few years at Leipzig, and I think that Marco Rosa has got them playing a very different way to I think they were playing a while ago. But yeah, I'm interested to see what you thought about it, because you're obviously, I think you've always been quite high on Timo Werner.
I am, and I still am, because he's the one, I keep talking about this, but he's the one forward that Pep Guardiola couldn't work out. Mm. He couldn't work him out. And that to me will always rank him high in my estimation. The thing I love about him is that, the thing I love about this fit for Ange is that, you know, even when Richarlison wasn't scoring, Postecoglou said he gives us so much other than goals, so much else than goals. And the thing about Werner, it's great. It actually takes the pressure off, because Werner can come into this team knowing that if he doesn't score, and even if he doesn't assist, he's still contributing a huge amount. That's a great amount of freedom to come into. He's come into this team as well without the expectation of being the primary goal scorer. Not even necessarily the primary creator. So it's a win-win for him, because the expectations aren't vast, actually. You know, the Spurs ship is already sailing. He's merely joining it. He's one extra person on board. And I think that fits him well, because I do think he's got unfinished business. I do think there's a level of quality we've not seen him show yet in the Premier League. And I think he's ready for it. And I say that only because if you look at all the players who Postecoglou has improved, or not even necessarily improved, but whose best he has extracted from them or helped them to extract from themselves, I just think the Werner will slot into that really well. I just think the style of football he plays, finding gaps, combining well, you know, movement at his best is extremely useful, you know, exceptionally quick. I just think that's all great for Spurs, actually.
Do you think he's going to play against Manchester United? Because they're missing a few players on international duty for the weekend and for the foreseeable.
Slot him in, why not?
Could be an interesting one to start him in.
They've got a really nice range of forwards now, Spurs. Kulusevski, Son, Richarlison up in there, like, really.
See, the Kulusevski thing is interesting, because I think that obviously when Son returns and these players return from the international duty, I think a front three of Son, Kulusevski and Werner, or Son, Werner, Kulusevski.
There's one combination, yeah.
Yeah, I think that the way that those two move, and the way that Werner is really quite unselfish in the way that he creates space for other strikers.
Right.
He is a really good foil. Strike partner.
Yeah, excellent, yeah.
I think that three just provides Spurs, especially when James Maddison comes back, that three is going to occupy any back four.
This is it, right.
And allow space in behind. And with this, just the difference between Spurs this year and last year is just, I just think they look a lot more dynamic and a lot more fluid. When everyone is back fit, that is...
As an option, this is the thing. This is why
it's a really good
option. This is why I'm excited by it, because I just think, you know, modern football is about squads that provide a variety of attacking threats, and he complements everyone else really well. I think he's one of those players that could actually fit with, if you look at forwards that could fit with two other forwards really, really well, in terms of his compatibility rating with other forwards, like his compatibility rating is, I think, really high. He's the kind of, he's the kind of footballer forward that other forwards look at and go, I'd love to play with that guy. Like, he could create a lot of space and opportunity for me, definitely.
It's a big move for him, though, as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's a big move for him because he's 27 now.
Mm.
I feel like this has kind of got to work for him, especially ahead of the Euros.
Yeah.
But Timo Werner has always struck me as someone that will find a place to land properly. The neutral in me really hopes it is Spurs, because I think he could genuinely do something quite exciting there under Postecoglou with that configuration. I think it's a very different thing to going to Chelsea, especially at the time. Like, that was a big, big move.
I just think it's amazing that you can be instrumental in the Champions League triumph and still be questioned. But
Havertz, the guy who scored the winner in the, that is still, yeah.
And Werner's form in that run-up, Werner's form against Real Madrid just absolutely tore them apart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see how that works out for Spurs. There's a good piece by Seb Stafford-Bloor on The Athletic about that, by the way, which I'd recommend going reading. But very sensible Spurs fan, Seb Stafford-Bloor. Sensible Seb Stafford-Bloor.
Sensible Seb. Oh, God.
He's going to hate that.
He's absolutely going to hate it. Yeah.
Happy New Year, Seb.
Keep it in.
Let's talk about a transfer the other way, another loan deal.
Mm.
Jadon Sancho returning to Dortmund from Manchester United. David Ornstein reported on The Athletic that apparently they reached a loan agreement with a deal valued a minimum of 3.5 million euros. Dortmund won't pay all his salary, but will contribute, and United will stand to receive potential bonus payments based on his performances. What do you think about this?
It's great to see an English player getting Champions League football. Sorry. I'm really happy for him. I wonder, I just want him to get back to some measure of form. I don't know, we're not expecting to see the Jadon Sancho that left for Manchester United. I don't know if he can get back to that level. That's my one thing that I worry about. I just want him to get back, if he can get back to 70% of that, 70, 75% of that, then I think that's a success. Actually, just because the blow to his confidence the last couple of years, I can't imagine. But what is also good is that he comes back into a Dortmund side with a range of options, so it won't be immediate pressure on him to come and perform because you've got Adeyemi in the mix. You know, actually, funnily enough, Dortmund have got a pretty decent forward line. My one slight concern is he quite far down now the pecking order? It's going to be really, really important to kind of almost, I've just said this, like, can he get back to that form? But it's going to be really important for him to almost treat this as a reset, not as a kind of continuation of, let me pick up where I left off, but actually, this is absolutely new. Mm. And I don't know if he'll nail it, if he comes to it with a sense of regret or time lost. He has to just put that all behind him and really go for it. But if he does that, Dortmund have got a range, again, like rather like Spurs, a range of really exciting attacking options.
It's an interesting time for Dortmund. Because there's been a lot of talk about players being unhappy with Edin Terzic, or some players being unhappy with Edin Terzic. They've come in for a lot of criticism in the first half of the season for maybe lack of tactical flexibility, or lack of a clearly defined tactical plan at all. And in the winter break, they had Nuri Sahin and Sven Bender joined as assistants to Terzic, which I think is really, really interesting, because there was a lot of talk that Terzic might leave. The initial reports about Sahin coming in, there were a lot of people who suggested that he would replace Terzic in the summer, which kind of got dismissed. Mm. You also got Vatska announcing that he'll go at the end of next season. There's an interesting generation rejoining the club in a coaching / administrative level.
Yeah.
I think it's something that could be really, really good for Dortmund, because you know, Sebastian Kehl is the sporting director there now. He played under Klopp. Sven Bender played under Klopp. Sahin played under Klopp. You've got people who were around as players of that kind of generation that a lot of Dortmund fans, and to be honest, Vatska has continually referenced that era in Dortmund's history. We talk about this quite a lot. Mm. But they're now being put in positions to actually create change within the football club. Mm. And I think it's really interesting. It's going to be I think it might get worse before it gets better. But I think it's a really interesting period for Dortmund. And Sancho played such a key role for Terzic in that cup win. Mm. I do wonder whether returning to England, especially around the time that it happened, you know, post-Euros, all this kind of stuff, I wonder whether that was the best thing for him. I'm still not entirely convinced he wanted to go. I think going to a club like Manchester United at the time that seemed to have such a void in terms of clear direction at a leadership level. I mean, we've seen it with numerous situations over the last few years, how there just seems to be this complete lack of responsibility and leadership at the executive level.
He was bought with absolutely no plan for him.
Yeah, but also for any Manchester United fans who are rolling their eyes and being like, yeah, but you know, good riddance or whatever. Yeah, I think maybe I think it can be hard to overstate how much of a culture shock that is. Because, for example, even like recently going to the Dortmund Bayern game and seeing Harry Kane come out of the mix zone, no one asked him a question. This is Harry Kane, the England captain, right? And he's playing football in a place that he's not getting repeatedly pulled in for questions after games.
Yeah,
it's even at the very top level in Germany, the noise compared to England, especially if you're an English player, is so minimal.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're really left alone. And the thing that I hope is that, well, there's two things. I hope that he can return to, or he can kind of maybe feel like he can clear his head a bit. He's got away from the noise. He's in a more positive environment. People who really want him to succeed. I think Terzic really loved him.
Mm.
And they will be glad to see him back there. I mean, Vasco financially will be really, really glad to see him back there, because he's like, well, if we are going to get you back, we're going to pay like a fraction of what we sold you for. My concern is that returning to a place like Dortmund after what has happened at Manchester United maybe negates the positives, because you're not going into it like you were as a 16-year-old, 17-year-old, and you're not coming through as an unknown. You're going back there with a lot of spotlight on you. And we've seen already with certain other Manchester United players who go out to loan elsewhere, like they get covered more than they would do if they were just there and had nothing to do with Manchester United. The other slight concern for me, sorry, I know I've been going on for ages. The other slight concern for me is the form of some players who return to Dortmund.
Shinji Kagawa.
However, they did it at a different point in their career. You know, Jadon Sancho is still 23 years old. He's kind of still in the window of player that Dortmund would sign. So I'm hoping that it's different. I'm trying to kind of temper my expectations a little bit. I don't think he'll start straight away. If he does, I'll be super surprised. But you've also got someone like Jamie Bynoe-Gittins there, who is quietly putting together quite an impressive season.
Right, there it is.
You know?
Yeah.
And you don't want to
disrupt that.
Disrupt someone's development, especially for someone who's a temporary measure at the moment. So I feel like he will be used as an option off the bench for the rest of the season, unless he just kicks into form. And do you know actually who he might be a good option instead of, is someone like Marco Reus. I wouldn't be surprised to see Sancho playing a little bit more centrally sometimes, actually, or drifting centrally.
I'd love Sancho to become the elder statesman like Reus has been. I'd love that for him. As a happy ending, I'd love that.
I mean, to be honest, the ideal scenario, I think, for us, especially because we're big fans of Jadon Sancho as a footballer, I think it's really, really hard to overstate how unbelievable that period was with him and Haaland combining. We used to have a bit where it'd be like, Haaland goal, Sancho assist. It's just like...
automatic.
Retweet. You know, you know, I wrote that piece for The Ringer, which is like aged dreadfully a few years ago. Well, actually, it's not aged dreadfully. I think it's just aged quite
melancholically. It's poignant.
Yeah, about really hoping that there was a WhatsApp group and really hoping that lot were like, let's stick around for a couple of years. I know Dortmund's financial model is reliant on selling big players like that every now and again, but if you look at what Bellingham's gone on to do this season at Real Madrid, you look at what Haaland went on to do at Manchester City, not everyone is built that way, right? And I think Sancho really thrived in a collective of shared responsibility in a football sense. And I think that when he went to Manchester United, I think the lights were so bright and the fee was so big and his hype was so hype. I think it's very different, you know? And I know that a lot of people won't have any sympathy for that, especially because of his wage packet. And I get that. But I think that, that aside, I think we can all understand why that move didn't work out quite as well as it could have.
I'm sad about it. I'm still sad about it. But, you know, I want him to go to Madrid, though. God. I want him to bypass the Premier League altogether. I mean, I was happy he went to United as a United fan because, of course, you want a player like that to be at your club. But for him as a player, I wish he'd just bypassed
the UK altogether. Done what Jude had done. Yeah. Imagine if him and Jude link up again. I mean, they only kind of crossed over briefly, but imagine if they link up again at Real Madrid.
He's still good enough. Still good enough. Anyway, yeah.
I mean, for Manchester United, Ten Hag's there, he's not going to play, right? So for them, from a Manchester United point of view, what's the best scenario? That he absolutely balls out? It's kind of, they're going to be kind of criticized either way, because if he goes there and absolutely balls out, everyone's going to be like, what the fuck were you doing? But they kind of need him to ball out to drive his value up so they can flip him in the summer.
To be honest, I think people will just look at it and be like, oh, the Bundesliga is just not a serious league. I think there'll be a lot of that dismissive talk.
Watch him try.
Listen, all I'll say is this. There's a parallel universe where Sancho, Hoyland, and Rashford are United's front three, and they're spectacular. I will always, this is the thing, this is the hill I will die on. I firmly believe that a beautifully coached Sancho, Hoyland, Rashford front three is one of the best front threes in Europe. I'll always subscribe to that. So that's that. That's my thoughts on that.
And that is all I have to say about
that's
that.
That's the ball game.
Well, all right, that's the podcast then.
That's the podcast.
Should we wrap there? I think we can wrap there. Keep it breezy on a Tuesday, on a Thursday.
But
I'm very much looking forward to the Manchester United Spurs game now.
Me too, yeah. Intrigues.
I want red cards and goals as a neutral. But yeah, we'll be back on Monday. Like I mentioned, Wright's House on Friday. Go check that. Don't forget to check stadio.football. Scroll to the bottom, pop your email address in if you want to sign up for the newsletter. And don't forget to check the Stadio Outro's place on Spotify. Speaking of which, playing out this episode on World According to a track called Wax, out on the great Strom label. Anything you would like to add, Musa Gwanga?
Nothing further.
Sure?
Absolutely sure.
Have a lovely weekend, everyone. Much love. We'll be back with you on Monday.
See you then.
What's in the dark's face?